Marvel's Daredevil Season 2, Episode 7, Semper Fidelis is over, but we are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps, Day 2 of Week 2 of the Marvel's Daredevil podcast here on Post Show Recaps. Hello, everybody. I'm Josh Wigler, and I am joined here by a man who is regularly caught using the insanity plea, Kevin Mahadeo. You crazy, Kevin.
We all go a little mad sometimes, Josh, especially mad after seeing certain movies.
We all go a little Mahadeo.
Boo.
Blair. Starting this podcast off with a Blair. Kevin, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, had a bit of a weekend so far. Kind of lazy at home, but I don't know why that's so tiring to me, but being at home doing nothing is very draining.
Yeah, just being, you know, lethargic in itself produces feelings of lethargy.
Yeah, it's true.
It's a vicious cycle. But this is good news for you and I, because that means you and I can do a lot of podcasting this weekend. So we are going to do that. We're going to talk a lot of Daredevil. We are continuing our coverage of this season of Marvel's Netflix crazy, crazy show with its crazy, crazy Punisher and its crazy, crazy ninja battles. And it's all just madness right now.
I don't know, Josh. I'm not sure he's insane. It's just such a, like, when she said that, I was like, wait, really?
Yeah. Well, Frank Castle, he's an interesting man. He is a complex man. He is somebody that requires lots of picking apart. Many layers to this guy.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of levels, especially when he, you know, gets all gruff and crazy at times and starts shooting people.
Yeah.
That's a big level of his.
Yeah.
So and underneath that level is more shooting.
Oh, so much shooting. All of the shooting. Yeah. He is the king of shooting. He is going to be at the heart of the trial. It's the trial of the century right now. Forget O.J. Simpson. Frank Castle is the man.
The people versus Frank Castle.
Yeah. The people versus Frank is happening in this episode. Also, again, lots of ninja action going on. These two parallel stories, both of them right now, I think, are riveting.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Especially since one story is just mucking up the other one.
Yeah.
Matt's nonsense. Well, not nonsense, but just clear, like, as I said, he is into what's happening, I feel like. We can get more into it later, but yeah, there's some commentary I have about the scenes with him and Elektra, for sure.
He's getting drawn deeper and deeper into this thing. It is not great for Matt. It is probably exactly what Elektra would like, so this is good for her. The more that Matt is in her stuff, the happier she's going to be. It ends with a huge hole of a plot twist at the end of this episode, so we will talk about all of that stuff. Let's get into it. We begin with jury selection, which surprisingly is complicated for a case like this. You would think that would be straightforward.
How do you think, like, that seemed completely logical to me. How do you think it'd be so straightforward?
I am just joking with you,
Kevin. Oh, okay. I was so confused, where I was like, I don't understand.
I gotta work on my sarcasm today. It's too convincing.
Jury selection always, like, it sucks. Like, have you ever gotten to that point where they actually have to question? Yeah. It's so weird and crazy, because, like, I see scenes like that, too, though, where it's just like, I think he's definitely doing a good thing, or I think he's guilty, blah, blah, blah. And part of me, though, does think, like, how many of those people are just trying to get out of jury selection, you know? Like, I definitely have heard of this case, and I want him dead.
Yeah.
Like, all right, go home, you know?
I was picked for a jury about almost 10 years ago, and it was for, like, a really basic case that was going to be done in a single day. That was the whole thrust of it. It's like, we're going to be done today. And I going into it, I really didn't want to do anything. But then I heard that, I was like, oh, well, this sounds fantastic. It's just done in one, and then I don't have to serve for 6 years. I'm in.
How long did it actually last?
It actually lasted a day.
Oh, okay.
It was great. My jury experiences have been fantastic so far, knock on wood.
I never made the full all the way, because I kind of don't want to, but my girlfriend Robin really was just like, it's your civic duty. Why would you not want to be on a jury? That sounds cool.
It's fascinating. It's a really fascinating experience. I mean, it sounds, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, but I have work, I can't take off of work and all of this stuff, and I don't, it's going to derail my life and everything like that. And oftentimes that's true. These are not things that are wrong, but it is, you know, A, it's your civic duty, and B, it's fascinating. It's a fascinating life experience to have under your belt. So I would say don't resist the tide, Kevin. You should lean into it.
don't know. I've seen 12 Angry Men, and that's probably enough for me.
Yeah. So Frank is going to be put on trial. He is. We see him wearing his orange jumper. He looks like he is in Orange is the New Frank Castle.
Orange. Well, I mean, Orange is the New Black works for him. He normally wears all black.
Yeah, what if the Punisher was just running around in an orange Punisher suit?
He would just be really bad at saying inconspicuous. Like, he would just be awful at it. Like, oh, there's a Punisher again. It's like when Matt was on that rooftop and Electro was like, obviously he's right there.
Yes.
That's what the Punisher would be like. They'd be like, I mean, he knows we can see him, right?
Major costume change coming for the Punisher's spinoff show when he is just wearing nothing but orange in honor of Syracuse.
Oh, really? Really? Yeah. You're going to throw your alma in there?
Yeah, he went to my school. I was roommates with him. I was roommates with a guy who may have turned out to be the Punisher.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
That's disturbing to think about.
Oh, he was great. He was the best. So back to Nelson and Murdoch, Karen and Matt and Foggy. They're trying to figure out what they're going to do here. They're going to go for the insanity plea, the Naughton rule, which I had first thought of as the M. Night Shyamalan rule.
What a twist. The real twist is that he's not a great director.
Every trial ends with a twist.
Yeah, no, that would be interesting. Like, what twist do you think this trial could possibly end with?
They were dead the whole time. Frank was just killing dead people.
They're actually just in a TV show.
Yeah.
But then M. Night would have been a jury member because he loves inserting himself into his films.
Yeah, it would have been.
We sadly did not see him.
Yeah, he would have just had a quick cameo as juror number three.
Yes, and then he'd have some kind of powerful speech about how he's going to change the world as a writer or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to figure out exactly what they're going to do. They think the insanity thing is going to have a difficult time. It doesn't really work in the state of New York, they say. They're thinking maybe they can push for a mistrial to try and get Reyes kicked off the case.
Sorry, I just had a thought. What if, now I'm on the M. Night train, what if they cast Mark Wahlberg on that jury? Hey, Frank. Why you gotta be killing people, man?
Why you have to be killing people, Frank?
Sorry.
Why do these people need to be punished, man? Can't you just be reprimanding them?
Yeah, this seems not necessary, man.
Mark Wahlberg is the reprimander.
What? No, he's not.
He doesn't deserve your justice.
God, the happening is great.
He's innocent, Frank.
He's innocent, Frank. Who is he talking to now at this point?
Now he's talking to Frank.
Oh, as he's yeah. trying to defend himself as a reprimander.
Yeah, he's pleading with Frank.
The Punisher versus the reprimander. Don't be killing people, Frank.
Oh,
don't
man,
be punishing him.
Mark Wahlberg as Daredevil. Mark Murdoch.
Marky Mark Murdoch.
Oh, that's awful.
That's awfully good. I would watch that. Are you kidding?
I would watch it as an SNL sketch. I wouldn't watch it as a feature length film.
Yeah, it's like Mark Wahlberg talking to animals. Just get back Andy Samberg to do the bit.
Yeah. So Karen thinks that she can get Frank to cooperate. She feels that she has a special James Bond with the man that she can
James Bonding.
Yeah, she's James Bonded with this guy. She feels like she can reach him. Matt's basically saying, don't do this. You don't want to go there. And by the way, I'm not just saying this because you're Karen and you're my girlfriend. I would say this to Foggy, and I would also say this to a Navy SEAL. Fair because Frank Castle's a scary man.
Yeah, no, that scene where she goes in and they're like, you know, checking through her stuff and they're like removing the paper clips. It kind of reminded me of like Bullseye actually with the paperclip from the original Daredevil movie. But it's like when you're removing paper clips because they could be dangerous with this guy, that definitely says stuff.
Yeah, I think so. So she goes to visit Frank in jail. I noticed that Frank is always calling Karen ma'am.
Yeah, well, he's a very, you know, he was a military man. He's very formal.
Yeah. I've been told that you do not want to call anyone ma'am. This is not good.
It does have a elderly connotation to it, so some people could take offense. But coming from him, I think his military background makes it sound more formal than like, you know, like, hey, ma'am, I know you're quite older and all. Let me help you across the street or whatever.
What
like,
was
I
that
don't
voice?
Think,
what was that?
That was Country Frank Castle.
Country Frank.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Frank Cabin, not Frank Castle.
I love Country Frank. That's a great character.
Country Frank. Country yeah. Frank. Isn't that like a hot dog line or something?
No, that's one of the songs off of Fingers and Trunk's country right. album. Yeah.
When they went country for a little bit.
Yeah, it was interesting. Frank Castle, not impressed with the PTSD thing. He's like, we're not going to do that. I do not have PTSD. There are people who are actually going through PTSD. I don't want to look like another crazy-ass combat soldier who lost his mind. I didn't lose my mind on a battlefield. That's not where my life went to shit. And Karrad's like, all right, fine. We won't do the PTSD
I actually
thing.
Really, really like that. I kind of really respect that. Like, he didn't want to do it to make, you know what I mean? Like, they don't deserve that. He didn't want to disrespect the people who actually have it, which I actually thought was really powerful.
I loved that. I thought that was great. I think that's, you know, there's stuff about Frank Castle that is questionable at best, but there are a lot of things about him that make him a really compelling, interesting guy. And this is one of them that, you know, he's really, really dedicated to, you know, not disrespecting the memory of his work as Marines and everything like that. So I think I thought that was good. Instead, we're going to get character witnesses. We're going to try and get one of his old CEOs on board. That is going to be the way that they go. But before we really get into any of that, Frank would rather deal with some stuff with Karrad. They're going to go over his files and try and see if they can pick apart anything that he has missed when he has looked before. She says, you haven't done all of this with me. You haven't looked 100 times with me. Karrad Page is an eye-opener.
I mean, it gets a different perspective, right? Like, that would seem like just one of those ridiculous things. It's like, well, if he's seen it so much, what can she do? But you really do, like, if you're looking at something so long, you're just one person, you kind of get blinders, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you do miss things. So I kind of, you know, it's definitely a scene that I like, and not just Karrad being like, but let me help. Like, I actually really love what they've been doing with Karrad this season. And, you know, with this kind of, as we talked about, this Ben Urich thing she's kind of got going on, which I really enjoy.
Yeah, it's been good. I've really enjoyed it as well. We go back to Nelson and Murdoch. Matt is practicing his open speech. He's got a phone call from Elektra. She has found a lead that the guy who encoded this ledger that they had found during their James Bonding session is some, like, pervy NYU professor who teaches Asian studies.
And also takes a lot of cocaine. I mean, yeah. He's not Tony Montoya level, but that was quite a pile.
It's serious. It's very serious. What I loved about this scene is how Matt's like, I've got a really important case. It's the case of my career tomorrow. I can't go with you right now. And Elektra's like, but we might never be able to do this again. Listen, let's talk in 2 hours in person, and then we'll figure it out. And you never even see that conversation. You just see them immediately at this guy's apartment. So he definitely is, you know, he is going deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole, and he can't help himself. And that's the appeal of Elektra. She just, you know, she grabs you, and you never get let go. It's you're just stuck forever.
Well, we kind of, you know, this is hopping a little forward, but, like, looking at their interaction in this episode, especially, and especially later when they're at the what was that, like, a train depot,
right?
I guess.
The train depot where you go to get trains. It's like the Home Depot, but it's a spinoff. They sell lots of trains.
Do I look like Ringo Starr? I'm not the conductor. How dare you? That was a Thomas the Tank Engine reference. I don't know if you caught that one.
off track. That's a train pun. That's a train pun.
I got it. There's a very Batman Catwoman type relationship to them that really, I think, shows forth in this episode especially.
Yeah, I think so. And well done with the Batman reference. We hadn't done that yet, and it's almost 15 minutes into this podcast, so had to get one.
Well, Daredevil is being more Batman than Batman these days. What?
Well, Daredevil and Elektra, they go to this guy's place and they kick the crap out of him, and he's saying, "Oh, they'll kill me if I tell you what I did." And Daredevil gives them the, "If you don't, we'll make you beg for us to kill you." And he's got him up against this glass window. They're 30 stories up. He is punching the glass over and over and over again, and you get the sense that Matt is really on the edge here.
No, he is. Like, that moment, or after the guy, you know, starts confessing and Matt just touches the glass and it just shatters, and he has, like, kind of a look at his face just like, oh my god, that was, because it was real close. It was real close, you know, to disaster possibly happening.
Yeah. We had a bunch of questions from R. Philly this week. R. Philly had written in and said, Matt has never been gentle, but is his brutality increasing as the story moves forward? Is his time with Elektra drawing that darkness out of him? Is he starting to lose the inner conflict he's always waging within himself?
Yes, I definitely think so. I think this episode showed it, like, especially in the scene coming up later on. Like, he is just, like, wailing on people after they're down. And, like, we've seen him, like, knock people out before, but usually now it's just kind of like punchy, 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 punchy while they're down. And it's, I definitely think he's becoming more brutal and more violent the longer he's with Elektra, but that's kind of what we've seen, that Elektra brings out this darkness in him.
Yep, I think so. So we go from there. We have some information that there's some shipments that are coming later that night at the Bay Ridge Rail Yard. I have never been. Have you ever been to the Bay Ridge Rail Yard, Kevin, in your time in New York?
No, I called it the train depot. What makes you think that I would even know anything about any of this?
I hear it's a great place. I hear it's a great, great party time. Before that, we have Karen and Foggy at Nelson and Murdoch. Foggy is never going to eat again because he is looking at all of the dead bodies, and that feels fair to me.
Yeah, I can't imagine what that's like. Like, I listen to a lot of serial killer podcasts.
What?
Those are podcasts.
Excuse me?
Those are podcasts about serial killers, not podcasts for serial killers, just to clear up, because I realized how that statement could be taken.
Yeah, that was an extreme statement. Is serial killer like when Sarah Koenig loses it, and it's just like the alternate universe podcast where she is the one?
It's a series told, or a story told in series as she's murdering people.
Oh my God, terrifying.
That'd be kind of...
What serial killer podcasts are you listening to?
So I listened to this one called Last Podcast on the Left that's more like a, like, kind of very dark humor, offensive serial killer podcast. But then the other one is this one called Sword and Scale, which is quite incredible. And that takes a much more, like, serious tone. But they delve into, like, lesser-known cases. So they're not doing, like, the Ted Bundy or the Gacy's. And they have... like actual police interview recordings. They have like all these testimonials and stuff, and they play it. So you really get to listen to everything going on and really get an in-depth look at his stuff. It's fascinating. I highly recommend it if you haven't listened to it before and you like true crime. Not if you're like, I love comedy. Let me listen to this thing about murder. But how do we get to serial killers again? Now I'm just like thinking about serial killers.
Well, because Foggy is looking at these pictures of the Punisher's carnage, and he says he can never eat again. Kevin, can you listen to these serial killer podcasts and eat?
Yeah, so sometimes this is just listening to some of these people talk can definitely off-put you. And these are just listening to things. I can't imagine seeing like photos like that and how off-putting it could be. Like, just the auditory is enough to make me sometimes be like, oh, God. And then I just keep listening because I'm a weirdo. But I can't imagine what it must be like to look at photos like this.
We're learning so much about you here, Kevin. Way too much. Way too much.
Yeah, way too much.
Serial killer Kevin is a real thing.
No. Yeah. Don't say that.
Yeah, serial killer podcast. We're going to have to check
that out. The only serial killer I am is because I eat a lot of cornflakes. That's the only cereal I kill.
That sucks. So we've got Karen trying to convince Foggy to sort of get into Frank Castle's head because the PTSD thing is not happening. He's saying he's not having war flashbacks. But he is having trauma, and Karen says that Frank is solely fueled by one moment in his entire life, a single cluster of seconds. Every time he closes his eyes, he's reliving that moment, and when you open them again, nothing has changed. And so you're watching your family die all over again right in front of you. She says, this isn't something that happened to Frank. It's something that's happening. It's real.
He can't escape the past. He lives in it every time he closes his eyes. This fall, the punishment of the Punisher.
Yeah. So that sort of works, you know. It's like it's the kind of thing that, you know, sort of gets somebody to be at least a little bit empathetic towards this guy. Because Foggy is, you know, he's really not wild about the Punisher in the first place. He's a great lawyer because he's just going to do what he's going to do. But I don't think that he is Team Castle at all.
I don't think so either. And, you know, I will admit, yeah, there's a level here that people can relate to because we've all had those moments of like, oh, no, why'd that thing happen or why'd I do that thing if I only did something slightly different, and you kind of obsess over it. But with Frank Castle, like his obsession is taken to a new level, clearly, that most people don't go down. And the people who do go down that end up on those serial killer podcasts I had talked about.
Serial killer podcasts. No. I'm still so skeeved out by that. But there's another funny thing in this scene where Foggy is saying, like, this trial is going to go south. And I wonder what everyone's backup plan is, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to run away and open my butcher shop.
Yes, yes. But he said I'm just going to run away and open a butcher shop. I was like, yes, I'm so glad that they brought that back around again. Yeah. I was very delighted about it.
You know what? I'm rooting for Nelson and Murdoch to win this trial, but if they do lose, I do hope that the company goes under and we see Foggy in season 3 is running his own meat shop.
And he's super successful at it.
I feel like we deserve to see that at some point. I feel like that's something that ought to happen at some point down the line. Is like, you know, he's opening his own meat shop, and then there's some sort of case that Nelson and Murdoch are uniquely qualified to solve, and so they get brought back together. But at least, like, the beginning of the season would be Nelson running a meat shop.
That's like the movies where it's like the Mighty Ducks in the second one where they have to like recruit everyone back again.
Isn't that interesting? Like, Foggy Nelson associated with the Mighty Ducks. So you wouldn't
who knew? Yeah, weird, right?
Yeah, it's very strange. All right, let's go to the train depot. Let's find some trains. Let's get some cool stuff. That's where Matt and Electra go. They go to the Bay Ridge Rail Yard and they are looking for whatever it is. They have no idea what it is that they're looking for. There is a cargo train that's like filled with all sorts of like uniform materials. Matt can't really figure out what it is. They open up a train and dirt just pours out, just starts pouring out all over the place.
Yeah, I was very not confused, but I was kind of like, wait, what? Like, was it a trap? Like, or like part of me, it was like,
it's maybe a trap.
Maybe it's buried in the dirt. Like the dirt is like surrounding whatever it is that they were transporting, but then like I guess Matt would have sensed that though, so I was very confused by what in the heck was happening with that sequence. But it leads to a cool fight scene, and kind of like what I was saying, like the way they're working together, and they have that moment where she's sitting down for a second, and they have that chat, and they're like kind of smiling, and he reaches out his hand to her, and I'm like, this is Batman and Catwoman, and it makes sense because like Catwoman is both bad and good for Batman. Like I'm a big Batman Catwoman like ship fan, like I think that's them.
That's your OTP. That's your one true pair.
For sure. But it is like it was a very similar relationship and just how well they're fighting together and that kind of like fun talking, flirting in the middle of battle, I really, really enjoyed, and kinda I think they hit the proper note for them in those moments.
I also love this line when she gets hit in the abdomen and Matt's like, "Are you all right?" And she's like, "The best things in life leave you breathless."
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like that right there is such a like nice like moment between them that is very reminiscent of the Bat and the Cat, so to speak.
But these, you know, ever since we've gotten like Yakuza in the mix, I feel like the action has gotten really, really interesting. I love this train fight. I think it's one of the best fights we've seen on the show so far. That says a lot considering how action-packed Daredevil has been.
Yeah, I definitely really liked it. And again, I like the fact that it's the two of them, and you're seeing him working with other people. It's kind of like when we saw him working with Frank Castle briefly. Like, I thought that was cool. And I think part of it is that, like, I think they amped up the solo Daredevil fight with that new hallway stairway sequence. And that's like the epitome of his single fight this season thus far, I think.
Yeah.
So now the cool stuff is seeing him fight alongside other people and how that dynamic works.
Yeah.
And, I think for that, it's very awesome.
The team ups have been great. This was interesting. I thought Elektra almost shoots some dude in the head.
Right? And was just like, you're like, your lucky day.
Yeah,
like,
it's your lucky day.
Like Dirty Harrying him almost, which is crazy because like she's breaking the rule. He had one rule and she was like ready to do it.
She was a second away. You know, she was, you know, if that clip had one bullet in it, she would have broken the rule. She was ready to do it. So, yeah, I think that shows us that Matt is, you know, he's outmatched in terms of somebody who he thinks he has her number, but she is not playing by the Matt Murdock rules at all.
I think it's that, like, what we're talking about, like, Matt thinks he's in control, I guess, but really she is, because we're seeing also as the audience that him kind of falling deeper into a darker hole.
Yeah.
And he doesn't realize it, so I think the audience is aware, like, Elektra is really the one controlling him, but he's convinced, like, I'm doing great, like, she's not killing people, hooray!
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, pretty much. We go back to Matt. She's been wounded a little bit. She was, you know, sliced on the arm, sliced on the neck, so she's getting stitched up and stuff, but what was interesting is back at Matt's apartment, these two, does Matt have to be shirtless right now?
Yes. Yes, he does.
Why?
Is that a real question? Of course he has to be shirtless.
I mean, for our enjoyment, of course he has to be shirtless right now. But in that moment, Matt Murdock, you have a girlfriend. It's not Elektra. I know that you guys are partners in crime, but we're not tending to your wounds at all here. You could put a shirt on around this woman.
I'm not going to complain about it.
But this is not good. This is what's, you know, they're just like hanging out in their undies, you know? This is what leads to sex.
I'm sorry, Josh. I believe you told me that Matt totally wasn't into it. And
yeah,
if Matt
I know.
Wasn't into it, then where's the problem?
I'm
here, Josh?
I'm saying that it's a problem that he's into it. I don't like it.
Yeah, no, he's definitely into it. And yeah, I think I think him having his shirt off and her, you know, not wearing all clothes, I think that's a, you know, not a good scene for these two to be in, as far as, like, knowing especially Matt Murdock from the comics, it's kind of like, hey, Matt, you're going down a path that's not great.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I absolutely thought that this scene, like, the biggest surprise of this scene is that it did not end in sex. Like,
it ended in some interesting, tense, weird moments, or like sleeping, right? Like, it was so strange, like, what was happening in those moments.
Yeah, I mean, they're studying each other's scars. He's got these knife scars from the Russians. He has two slits on his pecs from the ninja Nobu, electric nose Nobu.
That was a great, that was, yeah, I love, one, I love the reference to, like, oh yeah, this is when I got messed up real bad a season ago, and she's just like, oh yeah, him, and it's like, wait, what? Like, are we just going to ignore this one? And she's just like, yeah, I know him.
Yeah. Then Elektra grabs Matt's hand and puts it on her thigh. And she's like, check out this scar. And he's like, that wasn't there in college.
Yeah, well, yeah, Matt. People don't get scars in the last 10 years.
Yeah. But it's just like, ooh, okay. This is, you guys are, this is going to happen. You know?
I mean, it's definitely, like, there's no, I feel like it's weirdly, like, it's, I don't know, like, either Matt's just real dense, or, like, he's just like, I could totally, you know, ward this off, which I guess he could.
I guess.
But, like, I don't know, Matt just seems to have a lot of confidence in himself. But it's good to have, like, he should be confident in himself. He should, a guy should know, like, it's fine. Like, I'm not going to do anything because I have a girlfriend that I love. Like, I'm not putting an opus on, like, oh, yeah, Elektra seducing him. It's her pulling him in. It's on Matt to make a choice here.
Yes.
And he should be more confident in himself. But clearly he is not as confident as he should be.
Bad Matt. This is bad.
Bad. Bad Matt.
Bad Matt. All right, so let's go to court. We're going to start the trial of the century. We're going to have opening statements. It's going to be a no-show for Matt Murdock.
Yeah, an opening statement that Matt did not show up for. But then Foggy, like, kills.
Yeah, he's going to kill, but he's going to be very nervous at first. Because even, like, Frank Castle's like, hey, looks like you guys are a man down. And Foggy's like, you know those college stress dreams where you're in your underwear? That's me.
We've all been to Foggy in those situations. Yeah.
But Reyes, she delivers, D.A. Reyes, she delivers a big, you know, opening statement that's pretty good. Frank brutally murdered and tortured 30 people at least that we know of. He's taken the law into his hands. He's acted as judge, jury, and most violent executioner. You will hear his victims were criminals, but they're not the ones on trial today. And justice does not belong to Frank Castle. This is not the Wild West. That's Jonah Hex's domain. It's up to you to take the city back from lawless vigilantes like Frank Castle. This man is no hero. He is a serial killer, a pizza serial killer, and he is guilty.
Oh, sure. Pizza serial killer, you're fine with. Serial killer, that one's not good.
I'm out on that. I'm out.
yeah, no, I mean, it's really interesting because, like, when you look at these cases and stuff, you know, theoretically, you're supposed to be judging whether or not someone broke the law. And there's no question he did. But obviously the angle is trying to make it that, you know, he had to break the law and, like, he has reasons and he's mentally unstable and stuff. But, like, objectively speaking, Reyes is right. Like, this guy did things that are super against the law. So, I mean, her opening statement is legit.
Of course it's legit. She's the DA, number one. And number two, she's trying the Punisher, you know? Yeah. This is not hard. This is not difficult stuff. This should be a slam dunk. And Foggy is rightfully worried that he is not going to be able to cough up enough, you know, reasonable stuff in this case, especially because he's not the guy who's preparing the opening statements. This is supposed to be Matt's territory. But bad Matt, he is not there. So Foggy steps up to the plate. He starts reading off of cue cards at first. It's not going well. It is just not playing well. So he finally decides to bust out some other legal kung fu. He's just going to improvise. He says, so you're 19. You're standing in hot sand. The sun is burning down. There's noise. There's yelling. There's gunfire. And the only thing you know for sure is you're surrounded by an enemy who wants you dead. But you do it. You endure it. Why? You have orders. You have a duty. And also because your life doesn't end here. You have people you love waiting at home. Aside from being a decorated Marine, the man before you is a good husband and an excellent father. Frank Castle returned from the hell of war wanting nothing more than to pick up his life. But his wife, young son, and daughter were brutally murdered by criminals, and no one, not the police and certainly not the DA, stepped up to make it right. Frank never came home. He just traded in one war zone for another. This trial is not about vigilantes. It's about the failure of the justice system and how one man is being used as a pawn to cover up that system's mistakes. The prosecution wants blood, but as the judge said, to get it, they have to prove this case beyond reasonable doubt. All I'm asking is keep an open mind. Frank is impressed. He grades it a thick slice of bullshit.
Yeah. But hey, you
but it's a thick slice. That means it's, you know, that's a pretty big chunk.
Yeah, and you serve it up well, and there you go, you know. I think Fonky did make valid points. Like, I think, you know, he's trying to angle it that this isn't like, if Reyes says that, you know, this is not how justice is supposed to be handled, Foggy's saying that justice is broken right now, you know, that justice isn't being served properly, and that the system is broken, which is, I mean, in this climate, saying the system is broken seems to be the way to go. So I think he has, you know, a reasonable idea to float to the jury, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
whether it pays off, we'll have to see, I guess.
You know what? It's probably not. It's hard. Yeah. It's really hard to imagine that Nelson and Murdoch is going to win this.
Yeah.
Especially, I don't know, because I feel like we want to have the Punisher in prison. Like, I feel like that's a good storyline. So I feel like that's got to be the direction that we're going to go in.
Rorschach in prison in Watchmen, right?
Exactly.
At that point, it's just like, you're trapped in here with me.
Right. I feel like we got to go there with him. I feel like that's just a better way to tell this story, and it's so improbable to imagine him back out on the streets because a jury allowed him out there. I just do not see that happening.
And look how good he looks in that orange, so why not keeping him?
He looks great in orange. But I think, you know what, at least for the time being, good job, Foggy. You held them off. Matt shows up. He also tells Foggy, you did great. And everyone's like, Matt, why are you not here? Where were you?
Yeah, seriously. The legit questions. Matt needs to get his stuff together.
I'm sorry. I was at the train depot. I was buying you guys a train. Yeah. We didn't win the trial yet, Matt. We don't have that kind of money to spend on trains.
And we never will have that kind of money.
So Matt, he is going to get back into this. They're going to have the chief medical officer on the stand tomorrow. Matt wants to take a shot at this guy. Karen is going to catch him up, and it is going to lead to a very uncomfy conversation between Matt and Karen back at Matt's apartment.
Yeah, but you mean leading up to it, right? There's nothing more romantic than trial prep.
Yeah.
Like, imagine, like, come on over to my place. We'll talk about the case together. And it's like, yep. Romance, you know, it was just really funny to me.
Well, this whole thing is difficult because, you know, it's the dating the coworker thing, which does not always end well. Sometimes it does, good for the people that it does end well for, but often it doesn't. And this is the kind of thing where they have to, you know, kind of marry their romance with their work, and it is going to lead to some strange, awkward, tense, philosophical debates where Karen is kind of like, you know, maybe Frank Castle has a point, and Matt Murdock, being Daredevil, is like, no, you know, he really doesn't. And so it's just going to be a really uncomfortable situation between
these two. It's super uncomfortable because this is also, I mean, there's, you know, this is something inherent to their characters. Like, Matt especially, like, something inherent to him is the whole no-killing thing and being a Catholic and stuff like that. And then you have her who feels this way that, you know, maybe it is good that he's killing these people. And that's not good. That's like one of those deal breakers for relationships because it's something so important to them as people.
Right.
Which is bad. But also, I wonder, personally, do you think Karen would feel slightly differently if she hadn't killed someone?
Yeah, probably. I mean, she probably wants to justify her own actions to herself. Like, you know, she wants to be able to look in the mirror and like what she sees in the reflection. And I think that she would find some comfort in the fact that someone like Frank Castle is approved by Matt Murdock or approved by the people that she loves. I think that that absolutely plays a role in this.
Yeah, I kind of really like that because it's never overtly stated, but, like, it's definitely there, in my opinion, in the subtext, which is, I think, really well done, that they're not hammering it in, you know, like, trying to force it to be like, hey, remember when that happened? That's why she feels this way. But if you, like, really read into it, you can definitely see that she needs this for her own, you know, her own thing, which I think is really cool and really interesting.
I thought it was really funny how she's like, Matt, do you believe in the devil of Hell's Kitchen's cause? And I just wanted Matt to be like, well, I am the devil of hell.
Or just the devils of hell. What devil of hell?
Wait, who's that?
Who's that? I don't know what you're talking about.
I gotta go.
Falls over.
Gotta run. See ya. But no, instead it leads them down this uncomfortable conversation where Matt is talking about how Frank should be behind bars. He deserves a fair trial, but he has killed people. Karen says, bad people. Matt says it's not his decision who gets to live or die. Sometimes that's up to God or a jury occasionally. and Karen...
I just love the occasionally.
Yeah, occasionally. Vengeance is not justice. What he's doing is completely wrong. Karen says, right or wrong, you can't deny it works. Matt is like, I can't believe that you actually believe that. And Karen's like, I don't. I really don't. Except that maybe I do.
Yeah. And then it's like, you know what? I should go. Like, yeah.
It's not even that. Matt's like, you should go.
Yeah. It's just so, like, uncomfortable.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah. And, like,
things have been going so well, and this is just such a very weird, unfortunate hiccup.
Yeah, it doesn't help that Matt's also been running around doing his Daredevil stuff with Elektra, I'm sure.
Sure.
But, like, you know, this is, like I said, it's an inherent philosophical thing between them that I feel like will just naturally spell disaster. Sort of like when you look at, you know, one of the things I really loved about First Class, X-Men First Class, is that you look at Xavier and Magneto, and in general, they have the same philosophy. They both want, you know, good things to happen to mutants. But at the end of the day, they have this one philosophical difference about how to achieve that goal.
Yeah.
And that is what will ultimately destroy their friendship. And, like, even watching First Class, you know that it's a thing that's going to end up just ruining everything. So you're just kind of waiting for that shoe to drop. And I think that's the same thing here. It's such a big difference between the two on something so important with Matt and Karen that I think it's just, I think at this point, their relationship is just waiting to end.
It's on rocky ground right now. But, I mean, it's just one thing. I feel like maybe they can get over it. But it's definitely uncomfortable.
We can certainly get over murder. Well, it also becomes a problem where if he strongly feels that way, he can never find out about what she did then.
Right.
Like, that's a problem. You know, that's an issue.
Yeah. You know what makes this whole thing so much more awkward is that Elektra was there the whole time.
Well, we don't know the whole time.
Matt was like, how long have you been there? She's like, oh, I didn't hear anything. I definitely didn't hear about the girlfriend. I definitely didn't see you tying a noose around your own neck.
Right? Exactly. Like, yeah. But that's what kind of why I love Elektra. Like, that moment.
She's awesome. Elodie Young is so good as Elektra. She's easily one of my favorite characters on the show right now. It's really, you know, she is top three, I think, for sure.
Who are the is the other two, Daredevil and Punisher?
Yeah, probably. Sorry. Even, you know, we love Foggy, but he can't crack that, I don't think.
Yeah.
But she's so good.
Maybe for me, it's Foggy at three and then Punisher at four.
Okay. Well, I'm
one of I feel about it. That's not towards John Bernthal.
Sure.
He is killing it. He's killing people and it. you know, my feelings towards the Punisher are what they are.
Elektra's so great. I didn't know that your time pairing Thai food with wine was so important to you.
Yeah, I just love how she mocks him and stuff. But that's what I mean. This is such like a great, fun relationship. But also probably doomed to failure because she clearly is still going to kill people if she has a shot.
Yeah.
Literally has a shot.
Yeah, if she had a bullet, she would have done it. So, yeah, I mean, as doomed as you might say that Karen and Matt are, you cannot be sitting there telling me that OTP Elektra Matt. That is not to last. There's no shot.
Matt has way too many relationship issues in the comics, especially to know that Matt probably just is no OTP with anyone.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think that this is really doomed for tragedy, I feel like.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so Elektra, you know, she's like, oh, well, I found this thing. There's, you know, we've looked around and there's only a couple of companies in New York that are capable of hiding as much dirt as we came across at the train depot. One of them is Midland Circle, which was associated with Wilson Fisk and Nobu. And so she's like, we should look into that. We should do something. Matt's like, I got court tomorrow. How many times do I have to tell you that I've got a gerb? And she's like, all right, well, then I'll do the recon myself. Little do we know, she is not doing the recon. She is doing something else.
Yeah, which we find out about real soon. Because, that scene is just kind of like, oh, no! Yeah. It was a very, like, that sucks moment. when we find out what she was doing.
Yeah, immediately we find it out. We go back to court. The medical examiner, he just like snaps immediately.
The most shiftiest looking medical examiner.
I gotta say something. I did a thing. I did a thing.
Yeah.
And everyone is excused from the room except for the counsel and the guy. And he's like, I did it. I screwed things up. I, you know, messed up the records, and I had to do it. These animals came into my office and said that they would kill my family at the same way that they killed Frank's family, so I falsified the reports. But it's all thrown out. All of this doesn't count, which would have been really great for Nelson and Murdoch, but it doesn't count because he was coerced into making this confession by an enigmatic, mysterious she who we know.
Yeah, who Reyes kind of blames on possibly them. Little do Foggy and Karen and know that, like, oh, it technically is Matt's fault, but...
it's 100% Matt's fault.
it's not. He didn't say, like, go out and do this.
He didn't do that, but it's Matt's fault for being associated with Elektra right now.
That's true, yes.
You know, and not establishing boundaries, although I don't think that Elektra is somebody who would recognize boundaries anyway.
No, not at all. Also, did you notice, because, like, I'm curious about this, because he said that the medical examiner said that he falsified, like, two people came in, right? Like, it was Castle, and then he said a John Doe. Like, I just feel like that can't be a throwaway thing, because, like, that seems like it's got to be important. But I was, like, trying to rack my brain, like, who's this John Doe? Who could it possibly be? We get no follow-up on that, really, right now. I'm assuming it comes back later, maybe, but I feel like that felt important, and I was kind of hung up on that for a little bit.
Plant the John Doe flag. We want to know who this John Doe is. I agree. I think that it'll be important. I have no idea who it will be. Will it be somebody that we've met on Daredevil before? Is it going to be somebody that is important in Punisher lore? And if that's the case, does anyone reach out and grab you, Kevin, in terms of a very famous Punisher villain that this could be?
That's what I was trying to think about.
Could this be Jigsaw?
I was gonna say maybe they're setting up Jigsaw for the Punisher.
Somebody with multiple gunshot wounds who could have been, like, ripped apart, and if that guy, you know, was his reports were falsified, maybe that is a guy who gets stitched back together. You could see that possibly happening.
Yeah, so yeah, that was definitely something that I had caught, and I was wondering if they're, like, going to tie something in with Punisher, and then I also definitely thought Jigsaw maybe is what they're trying to set up.
All right.
But for now, we got nothing. That's just a hardcore speculation.
Definitely something to watch, though. I'm sure that's going to matter for sure.
Meanwhile, Binging Billy just like, ha ha, yeah. They never bring him up again.
Maybe it was Binging Billy. That could be it.
Yes, it was Binging Billy there. Poor Binging Billy.
Yeah. So Matt is going to tell Foggy that it was Elektra, and they are going to have it out. They are going
I love this scene.
It sucks. It sucks.
But it's so good. Like, Foggy is so great. This is one of those moments where I'm just kind of like, how do you not like this guy?
I know.
I'd like say that his acting is not good. Like, I think he was so fantastic in this moment.
I thought so too, where he's like, I am going to count on you for nothing at all.
Yes. Like, you know, moving forward, I am going to count on you for nothing at all. Like, that's such a great line. It's so powerfully devastating for a friendship like that. Like, I loved it. I love the encounter. I love Foggy calling him out. It's great.
Tell your girlfriend to stay away from my trial. Matt's like, she's not my girlfriend, man.
Then you should be the one to tell Karen that. Yeah. Perfect. Like,
which implies, like, because if you don't, I will.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's and I don't think that it's anything where it's like Foggy is trying to, you know, ruin a relationship or anything. I think it is an expression of Foggy caring for and respecting Karen enough to be like, she does not deserve to be with you if you are gallivanting around with Elektra at night.
Yeah, 100%. And he's completely right. So, yeah, I mean, again, I loved it. I'm 100% on Foggy's side. I just love the intensity of the conversation. I think it was really powerful.
Agreed.
Yeah, love it.
Good stuff. Outside of the bathroom, when Matt comes out, Karen's like, what is going on? I deserve to know what's going on.
And Matt just be a complete dick.
Yeah, he's terrible. He's like, what, you want to know as my coworker or as my girlfriend?
Yeah, what a douche. This is more in line, like, he's becoming more and more like the Matt Murdock of the comics at times, right? You know, well, certain period of comics, for sure.
Where he's just a bit of a butthead?
Yeah, he's a bit of a dick, like, and he's really bad relationships. He's real bad relationships.
Yeah, well, he's screwing this one up. He says, I'll see you tomorrow, Karen. And then with his super hearing, he hears her say, maybe.
And then he does nothing. He does nothing about that.
He does nothing.
Yeah.
He gets very mad at Elektra. He shows up at the Midlands place, and he's like, Elektra! Why did you do this?
Elektra! Elektra! Martha! He throws her against the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, in her, like, I'm just trying to help thing, which, yeah. Because, you know, she's great on legal counsel. She knows how that would work.
She's saying, I'm just following your rules, bro. You don't get what you want by day, so you take it by force at night. This is who you are. Don't force yourself into thinking you're something else.
It's true. She's, again, she's not wrong. But, like, I also wonder now, like, maybe Matt's whole blow-up and whole bad thing with Karen is influenced by the fact that he, again, he has a more reckless, dark attitude being around Elektra so much.
I think so. I think it's a thing.
And then he proceeds to beat the ever-living crap out of some people.
Yeah, they go to get into the building to find out what they can find out about these people who probably moved the dirt. He is knocking out this one guy in particular, just relentlessly just punching him over and over and over and over again. And Elektra isn't there, and he's like, why didn't you help? And she's like, you didn't want me to.
Yeah, no, he was clearly releasing frustration in the most violent way possible.
Yeah, he has his own thing that he wants to do, and he's clearly on edge, and he needs to release this stuff however he's going to release it, so it's bad. It's not great.
Yeah, no, he's going down the dark path. It's pretty evident, and we'll have to see how that shakes out for him. I assume if he stays with Elektra longer, not well. But yeah, it was pretty violent. Like he smacks that guy's hand with like a steel, like one of those steel, not even a pipe, like those, I think it was like those giant, like steel screws almost.
Uh-huh.
And like that guy's hand looked just completely wrecked. It was brutal.
It was rough. They go inside the building. There is a gigantic sinkhole in the middle.
I think you mean a hellmouth, which I think you called earlier. I feel at one point you were like, what are they going to find? Or something about, I forgot what, but you were like, a hellmouth. And I feel like when I saw that, I was like, holy crap, it's a hellmouth. Like,
I didn't even remember that.
Yeah, I feel like you made a comment about finding a hellmouth in Hell's Kitchen, and I was just like, oh my God. And like, when funny. I saw that, I was like, Josh called it, there's a hellmouth.
That's really funny, because what I was thinking when I saw this scene was I was just having Home Alone 2 flashbacks. Wow, what a hole.
Awful. Yeah. Awful.
Foggy, I've reached the top.
I actually really
incidentally, I feel like that hole in Home Alone 2 was also a hellmouth.
Yeah, probably. And which Kevin McAllister crawled out from.
Yeah, because, you know,
was definitely trying to murder those people numerous times.
Because Marv fell down there. He injured himself greatly. And then didn't he, like, electrocute himself to death on one of those death traps that Kevin came up with?
What was nuts is that, yeah, there's a point where he gets electrocuted and you see his skeleton for a second. And then he's back to normal. Yeah. And I'm like, he's dead.
The rest of this movie is his death dreams as he
dies.
I wrote a ranking of all of Kevin McAllister's death traps in Home Alone a couple of months ago, and I ranked that at number one because that was the time where Kevin truly crossed the line and actually killed one of these men.
Yeah,
and it's not his fault that Marv has a healing factor that rivals Wolverine's. He actually did kill the man for a brief moment.
Oh, definitely. And I would say Deadpool is the correct rival at this point now, as far as healing factors.
Number one on the list. What is this hellmouth? Why are the Yakuza digging this gigantic hole? Why can't Matt hear the flashlight hit the bottom?
I love that. Like, I thought that was such a, like, I love that ending moment of just him dropping the flashlight and her being like, well, let me know when it hits the bottom. And there's like a pause and then it ends. And there's no sound.
That's gigantic. Like, you could fit like 7 trains from the train depot down there.
Maybe that's why. Maybe they're buying a bunch of trains and storing them underground.
You guys have no idea how valuable these trains are going to be someday.
They thought I was crazy collecting these trains, but I'll share them.
Crazy smart. Yeah.
Crazy like a fox.
Yeah, crazy brilliant. Yeah. I have no idea what's happening here, but obviously this is big. Maybe there's a river of slime down there.
Oh, God, I can only hope.
It's a river of slime! Yeah. I feel like whatever is down there is going to be a major, major, major set piece coming up.
No, they'll never talk about it again.
But it's going to be... I cannot wait. This is a great way to end this episode. You know,
I cannot stress how much I just really love that ending.
It's perfect. It's the kind of thing where, like, these are the moments, Kevin, where it sucks that you and I are doing this episode by episode, because all I wanted to do, instead of get on the line and talk about it with you...
Just keep watching,
was
right?
Was just, like, get right back into it. I just wanted to click next. So, really a great, great ending for a bingeable show, I think. It's the kind of ending that just makes you want to keep watching, and you would watch all through the night.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. And I think I'm trying to think back on the rest of the episodes this season. This might be the one that has got me to be like, oh god, I want to continue.
Electra one was good too. I mean, we knew it
That's true.
Saw the credits, but
yeah, which sucks, which I've avoided watching now. Like, I've
yeah, me too.
I've been avoiding watching these credits. So yeah, I think the Electra one would have done it for me had I not seen those credits.
Yeah, I think so. All right, well, that's about it for episode 7. Coming up next, episode 8, Guilty as Sin. So we will see what happens there. Very exciting stuff. I'm really pumped up for where this season is going so far. Hashtag time, Train Depot.
Train Depot, I think, is the way to go
Train
here.
Train Depot. Follow Kevin. He's on Twitter, at Kev Mahadeo. I'm at Round Howard. We will be back tomorrow talking about episode 8 of Daredevil, season 2. Trucking along here. Guilty as Sin is the next episode. We will talk to you all again soon. Take care. Bye.
Woo!